The lane to Mr. Bender's house is quiet. A breeze rustles golden leaves end over end along the gutter. The same breeze cuts across my face. It is cold, but I don't shiver. It's only California cold, not Boston cold. Mother and father claim I will never feel that cold again. Maybe. Do I really want to live for 200 years? Then again, do I want to live for only 2 either? Is that decision up to me? I'm nearly 18. 18 what? An 18-year-old thing that can make a choice? If Father really believes what he says, that there's a most important 10%, then one day I may make the choice to go to Boston. Kara and Locke are in Boston. A gust whips my hair across my face, and I startle, stopping in the street, closing my eyes but still seeing, remembering the feeling, brushing strands from my face 2 years ago. The saltiness, the crispness, the foamy spray of a nearby crashing wave, the sound of gulls overhead, the feeling of sand between my toes. These memories descend out of nowhere, giving me pieces of who I was, but their significance is lost. I sigh and resume my walk, not knowing if this memory is important or just more of the jumbled trivia of Jenna's life, like sock shopping. Maybe that's all any life is composed of. Trivia that eventually adds up to a person. And maybe I just don't have enough of it yet to be a whole one. My half-filled memory is pocked with extremes, flashes of surgical clarity, paired with syrupy slow searches for basic words any 4-year-old would know. Moments of startling insights followed by fits of embarrassing denseness. Vast gaps where I can't even remember what happened to my best friends. And then glimpses from my infancy that should never be remembered. But then when I'm feeling the least human, I remember kissing Ethan and feeling intensely alive. More alive than I think the old Jenna could ever have felt. Would that make a difference to the FSEB? In dark, silent moments in the middle of the night, alone, I count the number of times my chest rises, watching with detached interest this thing that I am, knowing my breaths don't take in oxygen. It's only for show. I'm almost impressed with the rhythm of it all, in a repulsive sort of way. And then it leads me, unexpectedly, back to a place where I can almost feel my fingers touching who I used to be. Jenna. The real Jenna. I wonder, is there such a thing? A real Jenna? Or was the old me always waiting to be someone else too? Hurry, Jenna, hurry! Kara's and Locke's voices won't let go. Or maybe it's me who won't let go. I jiggle the latch on Mr. Bender's gate and swing it open. His house reminds me of Thoreau's Walden. It is larger, but still rustic and natural, overgrown with landscape, banks of wild white roses tangling across the porch roof. He doesn't answer when I knock. I walk around to the side and down his long driveway. I see him examining a window on his garage house. Hello, I call. He turns and waves.
Good to see you.
I walk closer and see the window is shattered.
You broke it?
Someone did.
He says someone like it's a name. I look inside. Tables are overturned. Paint is thrown against walls. An upholstered stool is slashed and the stuffing pulled out and tossed. But it is the aqua-colored car parked within that stops me. The dusty cover has been partially ripped away to reveal an old and obviously out-of-commission car. I've seen that car before, but I don't know where. Maybe in a photo? Or maybe I've only seen one just like it.
Did you call the police? I ask. No, I don't want to get them involved.
Because of your secret?
I have to weigh the risks. This isn't worth it. I can clean this up in a few hours, and the monetary loss isn't more than a few $100s. What bothers me most is they didn't take anything, at least as far as I can tell. I have tools worth thousands of dollars in there. They didn't want that. just the sick pleasure of destroying something that belongs to someone else.
Like the first day I met him, he looks off in the distance toward the white house at the end of my street, and he shakes his head.
I can help you clean it up, I say.
Not now. I need a cup of tea. I'll do it later.
May I ask a favor, then? Can I use your netbook?
He hesitates.
Mine's broken, I add.
It's only a small lie.
Let's go.
With a few carefully worded inquiries, the facts spit forth freely. Mother and father would be horrified. I'm equally horrified, knowing that this is another suspicion confirmed. They are still keeping secrets from me. Important ones. Are there others? Nothing is denied by Mr. Bender's netbook, as it was with mine. He brews a cup of tea and gives me privacy as he shuffles through some proofs. News clip after news clip fills in holes, and at the same time creates new ones. They wrap around me in ways I hadn't considered. I feel... what? Mother's breathlessness? The need to look away? My bioengineered blood pooling at my feet? I lean back and stare at the screen.
You knew about Kara and Locke, didn't you?
Mr. Bender sets aside his proofs and nods. I stare at the screen, absorbing word by word a sliver of my life that changed everything. In spite of a pending civil action, the district attorney's office reports that it has no plans at this time to prosecute Jenna Fox, 16, daughter of Matthew Fox, founder of Fox Biosystems, based here in Boston. There were no apparent witnesses to the accident. Passenger Locke Jenkins, also 16, died 2 weeks after the accident without regaining consciousness. Kara Manning, 17, the second passenger, sustained severe head trauma when she was thrown from the car and as a result could not give investigators any information. She died 3 weeks following the accident when her family removed life support. My fingers shake. I press the key to bring up the next page. Fox, who didn't yet have a driver's license, is semi-comatose and still in critical condition. The severity of her burns and injuries makes it impossible for her to communicate or give authorities any details about the accident. Investigators say they can't rule out the possible involvement of a second car, but it appears that high speeds and reckless driving contributed to the car veering off Route 93 and tumbling 140 feet down the steep incline. The hydrogen in the Tri-Energy BMW, registered to Matthew Fox, exploded on impact, leaving investigators little evidence to piece together events from the evening of the crash. I close Mr. Bender's netbook. Somehow I knew I would never see them again. Something deep inside me told me they were dead. How? When? Before they scanned my brain, before they removed my 10%, did I hear someone at the hospital talking? Did Mother sob for Locke, then Kara at my bedside, knowing her daughter was responsible for it all? But I wasn't. I couldn't have been responsible.
It's not true, I say.
I didn't do that. I would remember.
You lost two friends. You may have blocked it out.
Or someone did. No wonder Mother and Father won't talk about it. I killed my best friends. High speeds and reckless driving. Their precious Jenna wasn't so perfect after all. Hurry, Jenna. Is that why the words keep circling through me? Trying to remind me of what I did? Strangely, I feel something. But it's not guilt. Does that make me a monster? I remember. Something, a bit. A black sky. Stars. The halo of a streetlight. Here, throw them. Keys flying through the air. My hand stretched out. Hurry, Jenna. A glimpse of the night, everything changed. Mother and father may have blocked out most of it, but they couldn't get rid of it all. A tattletale neurochip decided I would get a hooded peek of what I had done. Is the joke on father or me? Mr. Bender suggests a walk in the garden. He feeds the birds and they peck in his palm. I stretch out my palm briefly, but again they don't come to me. And maybe now I know why. One simple thing. I rip open boxes, box after box, books, dishes, papers, clothing, keepsakes. I dump them out, box after box after box. I ransack, I search, I break. None of it is mine. I collapse in the midst of the disaster I've created in the garage, and garbled noises crawl up my throat. It sounds like an animal. I am a kept animal, with no past but what they will give me. And all I wanted today was one simple thing, a red skirt. Another dark place. Floor to ceiling, don't you think? Claire points her laser to the ceiling and records the measurement. Fine, I say. I watch her, measuring for drapes for my window. I take in the angles of the room, the slant of light flooding through panes of glass, the planes that separate us, the irony of drapes to create darkness. I stare at her. My mother is an older version of me, but she's also something I will never be. Old. My skin and bones will not age. My biogel will simply reach the end of its shelf life and cease to operate. If I were to marry, I would not grow old with my husband. I could either die after 2 years or outlive him by 100. An interesting prospect. What price did Claire pay to keep her only child? She sees me staring, and it makes her busier. She chatters, fills space, is careful but does not address my gaze. She treads even faster to keep on the surface, but somehow I don't count it against her. She said that for months she was in as dark a place as I. Maybe staying on the surface keeps her from returning to a place where she can't breathe. She measures length and depth as carefully as a surgeon places a scalpel, as though it's a matter of life and death. Maybe for her it is. She's always careful around me. Is that why the word hovers close in my thoughts? Careful with her movements, careful with her words. Nothing is relaxed between us. Is she careful because she thinks I will break? Or maybe because she will? When I'm alone in the dark counting my breaths, is she doing the same in the darkness of her room, wondering, was it all worth it? Now, with light streaming through the window, she is busy, determined to gain control over what is natural. Each of her movements is like a blow, a punch, a fist kneading something into shape. Accident, I say. Her laser clicks off. She looks at me, instantly pale, her eyes sunken. What? I've learned how to say it. Accident. I assume that was another suggestion you and Father planted, to never bring up the accident. She sets her laser down on my nightstand. She looks at me blankly, weak. No, she says, easing herself down to the edge of my bed. I think it was something inside of you, not allowing you to say it. She nods her head, like she is plucking together words she's been saving. And we didn't want to push you. They're dead, I say. Her eyes glisten. She holds her arms out to me, and I slip through space like a feather on a current of wind, effortlessly carried by the force that is Claire. I sit on the bed next to her, feeling her arms holding me, rocking us together in primal rhythm. We tried to bring it up at the hospital, she whispers, her breath and tears warm on my cheek. It was too hard for you. You went into distress just trying to communicate. Shortly after, you slipped into a coma. We were afraid that we had made it worse, pushing you too hard. We didn't want to make that mistake again. She pulls away and looks into my eyes. It was an accident, Jenna. An accident. You don't have to relive the details. Is that why you blocked it all from our netbook? She nods again.
When you woke up, you didn't seem to remember it. We didn't want you to come upon something unexpectedly and have a setback.
She pulls me close again, my head on her chest. I can hear her heartbeat. Familiar. The sound I heard in her womb. The whoosh. The beat.